Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie.
Yeah.
We're talking about a very important issue today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is?
I don't.
No
what,
idea,
what is it?
Just pressing record.
That's all I do.
Perfect. Well, we're going to learn from Greg Sparrow. He is with Compliance Point. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Tell us about Compliance Point. How are you serving folks?
So Compliance Point is really a professional services organization. We were founded in the early 2000s. And really, we are focused on helping our clients responsibly engage with their customers in the marketplace. And what that really means is we're basically focused on helping them manage risk, specifically around things like information security, data privacy, as well as compliance.
Now, there's a lot of information that people may or may not realize is floating around about them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
Do you think the average person thinks there's more or less information about them than there really is?
I think most people probably would assume or be surprised at the amount of information.
Surprised in a good way?
Well, surprised from the standpoint of how much is being collected and what types of information is being collected. So, yeah, I think they are probably would assume that less information is out there about them than normally is.
So now, everybody's seen, had the occurrence where they went on the internet somewhere, they looked at an ad for something, and then like a week later, the something similar pops up in an unrelated website.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
That's probably the first, I would guess, glimpse of what data is out there about you. If that can occur, that's probably, some people might think it's coincidence, right? But
sure,
in actuality, that's very on purpose.
Yep, absolutely. No, that's very targeted advertising. Mm-hmm. That's quite common in the industry. And yeah, that's probably just scratching the surface as far as what's being tracked.
Right.
For sure.
So now, what's some of the information that Google and Facebook has about an individual?
Well, I think, you know, as Google has evolved, when you think about them as an organization, they've really started out, obviously, in the search space. And I think people are aware, and just in the scenario you outlined, that they understand that those types of searches are being tracked. And when they look at a product, that's likely going to show up or appear on another website. I think consumers are aware of that. I think what's changed of late is really when you specifically look at a company like Google, they've really integrated themselves into a lot of different areas. They're much more vertically integrated into your life, meaning that now they're embedded and evolved, have evolved into devices, the Android operating systems, phones, things like that.
Right.
And what that does is it really gives them access to more information than they've traditionally had, where traditionally it was just really the search information, that type of stuff of what you did in a browser. Now it can be everything from location data, where you've been, where you go to frequently. All of that type of information is captured in these phone devices and is often aggregated and sent up to Google.
Now, is it aggregated where it's anonymized, or is it aggregated so that someone knows specifically that I spent 4 hours at Perimeter Mall?
Yeah. Right. So it really depends on the specific scenarios. There really are both. There are both very targeted and specific areas in which they know you as an individual. But then there's also areas where they might be doing research, things like that, that they are anonymizing the data sets and looking at that information in aggregate.
Now, what about these devices that that I can communicate with? In order for, they sometimes have a word that triggers them to start mm-hmm. paying attention to me.
Yep.
If it requires a word to pay attention to me that turns it on, I would imagine that it's listening all the time, because how else would it know that I said the word unless yep. it was listening all the time? So when it's listening all the time, does that mean it's also recording all the time?
So there's a lot of speculation in this area. Some of these manufacturers of these devices obviously don't necessarily want to let consumers know exactly what they are or are not doing while the devices are supposed to be deactivated. But essentially, yes. I mean, certainly the device has to listen to be part or to respond to a trigger word, as you're talking about. And so they are always on from a microphone perspective. They do have oftentimes soft keys that can disable or mute them. But, you know, that's something that's implemented in software. And certainly there's no guarantee that that information or that that soft key is actually working and actually muting those microphones.
Now, is this something that it's just the way it is? This is the world in which we live, and privacy is kind of thrown out the window now, that we have to accept that there's not going to be as much privacy if we want to participate in any of these internet activities?
Yeah. So I think it is something that's evolved. Certainly when you look at, you know, the way we kind of have conversations around it with customers is you've really had this race towards information gathering, right? The age of information and big data, data mining tools, all of these technologies, which really have added a lot of very good benefits from a consumer perspective in what technologies we can access and how we can use our phones and all of those things. So there definitely are benefits to it. I think what's happened, though, is there's really been this kind of land grab around data. And then organizations really have said, let's try and monetize this in as many ways as possible on the back end. And they haven't really thought about what that means from a consumer relationship perspective. And I think we've seen some of that start to swing back the other way. We talk about it in the terms of, you know, consumerism, meaning that the consumer is much more aware and sensitive to their privacy. They understand that these services, oftentimes, if they're free, they're giving up something.
Right. If you're not paying, then you're the product.
Exactly. So, you know, I think it's about striking a balance. It's not to say that giving up your privacy or exchanging your information for a given service that you're happy with, there's nothing wrong with that. But when it goes to the level somewhat recently, when we've seen in some of the elections and things like that, where you have your information almost being weaponized against you from a political perspective, I think there's a balancing act that companies have to find there around what they're willing to let this information be used for relative to the consumer.
But this isn't a new problem. Like, there was a time when I remember a time, what, maybe 20, 30 years ago, where it was the let the buyer beware. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we're putting stuff out there, and if something happens, that's on you. Sure. And it was like, that was accepted. That was just the way it was. And then, like you said, a pendulum swung the other way, and they said, nope, not anymore. Now there's going to be all these rules and regulations, and it's on the company now that they have to not put out crappy products.
Yeah. I think what's changed there, I think, you know, you've really had an entire industry created probably since then around these different types of social media platforms. And I think while there's, again, a lot of information sharing that is very positive, there certainly is the downside risk from a social perspective on misinformation, those types of things that occur. And I think part of it is socially, we've got to have a discussion about where we're going to fall and where we're comfortable as a society of having those types of new technologies and how they're used and how they affect our day-to-day lives.
But it's just inherent in any type of new technology. At first, you got to kind of let it play out a little mm-hmm. bit so you learn where the edges are. And yep. then you can say, you know what? I don't want any more of that, but I want some more of that I'm okay with. And then it'll just kind of settle into some equilibrium that we're all happy with.
Sure. And I think that's part of kind of where we're at, right? I think when you see what's going on and a lot of the stuff, we deal with a lot of international companies, and there's probably this privacy discussion is more relevant or is really more pressing internationally, specifically in Europe. But there's also a lot of privacy regulations throughout the world, really, that this seems to be something that consumers throughout the world are more focused on, maybe so than here in the U.S. But I think as a maturity standpoint, as far as where the market is at, I think that's really the discussion we're beginning to have, is really what is appropriate. They've kind of let those technologies get out into the wild. They've obviously been widely adopted as far as social media platforms. And then really looking at, OK, now we've had some issues with it, right, where there's maybe been some influence in political campaigns, or there's some other examples of, you know, misuse of this information or technology. So now what do we do with that? Right. We've started to have that conversation here in the United States.
And then there'll be more regulation and laws that'll counter that.
Potentially. So, you know, regulations is something that, you know, I think most people probably look at it as a necessary evil. I think in this type of situation, you've got a situation where the consumer, it's very difficult for them to really exert control or pressure over these large organizations or these large platforms. And to me, good regulation would be something that speaks up and ensures certain consumer rights on their behalf, right? So it's not so much that the company cannot do certain things or can or can't do certain things. It's really about, is the consumer aware? Are they being transparent? And do they give them the choice and ability to opt out of those types of
right? I mean, processing? That's where this, I mean, I think this is where the big problems lie in these networks, social networks, is that they're, you think, you don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. There is no transparency. You think that this is them being nice guys giving you this platform, but they're manipulating it in certain ways that maybe aren't in your best interest all the time.
Sure.
And but don't you think that the market will take care of that? I mean, like, we don't have a MySpace issue anymore. You know, there's, you know, they were collecting data that the market, if Facebook goes too far, there's someone else is going to go, hey, we have something that is just like Facebook, except we're not going to collect the privacy.
Sure. You know, I think there is certainly areas in industries that are self-regulated, and that's where you get into industry standards. I think some industries are further down that path than others. So that's certainly one way to address that. And I don't think regulation is by any means the end all be all as far as solving this problem. The consumers at the end of the day have to decide and have a choice in the marketplace about whether they're going to engage with these platforms. What I would say, the issue with that right now is that when you talk about choice, most of these platforms are very monopolistic, right? There isn't really a reasonable alternative for them to go through. If you talk about disconnecting or unplugging from somebody like Facebook, it's very difficult to find some other platform that really has the type of user base that Facebook has. There's really no reasonable alternative there.
Right. Oh, well, you can say the same with Google. I mean, but there's other search engines out there that take less of your data.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of when the populace is sick and tired of it, then they're going to move on. I mean, there's going to be a line that'll be crossed, and then they'll say enough. That it's too far. Like, there's already advertisers leaving Facebook because their rules are too hard for them to deal with. They don't want to pay, you know, to get in people's news feeds anymore.
Well, there's both of that. I would say there's actually advertisers leaving where they get associated with certain, content that they feel like doesn't represent the brand. Right. Well, there's really problems across the board with that. You know, and I think that's where, to me, what we focus on with companies is really trying to articulate or have a conversation around what is your brand and what does that really mean in the marketplace, particularly in these B2C spaces. And what type of relationship do you want to have with a consumer? So part of that is obviously going to be a big marketing piece. But then the other pieces of that we can help with is, what are you doing around data privacy? What do your consumers expect around that? But then there's also data security as well. So what are you going to do to secure this information once you have it within your purview?
So now walk me through what the pain that the company's having where that you're the right fit to have a conversation with.
So most organizations that we get engaged with, you know, we talk about, we have expertise in regulatory compliance, information security, and data privacy. I'd say the most clients that we deal with, there's really two different areas. We have the B2C space, which tends to be larger brands. They're worried about their brand image in the marketplace, and they're looking at how do they manage off of some of these risks that are presented, whether it's a regulatory issue in Europe or it's, it may be a state issue here in the United States. Or maybe they're trying to implement an information security framework overall. I mean, there generally is some point problem that they're trying to solve. And then really what we typically do is engage them in a higher level discussion around overall risk management from an enterprise perspective. On the flip side of that, we also work with a lot of B2B customers that are contractually driven by a lot of these consumer facing businesses where they have contracts, there's revenue associated with the service that they're providing with the customer, and things like data security and data privacy are considered table stakes for them being able to handle that information.
So would it be when that GDPR happened, like getting companies ready for that? Is that a service that you would have provided?
Absolutely. So we have a full life cycle with that, in which we engage customers. Generally, what we're trying to do is help identify risks. So we're helping to find the risk very early on. We can help to mitigate or remediate that risk over the interim. And then in the long term, we look at program management for managing that risk over the long term.
Now, do you help them? So you help them stay ahead of it. So your job is to kind of see a little bit into the future of what's coming, not just react to what is.
We do. I would say, unfortunately, most businesses probably come to us after the fact. They've had some type of issue or event that they're dealing with, and that's really what's driven them to the table. There are some that are proactive and trying to stay in front of it. But yes, ideally, you know, we're helping to give them insights into what's coming and how to manage off of that from a future perspective.
But most of the time, it's some crisis has occurred?
In a lot of cases. So there
like
may,
what's an example of a crisis?
It could be a breach that occurred. You know, they could have some type of regulatory action against them. We do quite a bit of work where FTC might be involved in some investigations with the company. So it really just kind of depends on what that driver is for the organization.
And it could be that they didn't intentionally do anything wrong. It's just that they didn't have the technology to keep up with the regulation.
Certainly. I mean, it, you know, when you talk about all of these areas, it's really, we message around it is, you know, you've got to look at it as the entire organization. It's going to be everything from your governance and your policies to your business operations and your SOPs, and then even into your technology stack.
So now when you're working with a potential client, who is the person in the firm that you typically deal with? Is it the like chief information officer, or is it the C-level?
It can be. So yeah, most of the time I would say certainly sponsorship at the C-level is definitely involved in the projects we're dealing with, or the primary point of contact. CIO, CSO, those are generally the types that we're involved with. Sometimes general counsel. It kind of depends on the structure of the organization and where their responsibilities fall.
So now you mentioned privacy laws, and do you think there's going to be a national privacy law, or is there going to be some kind of mega law that's going to take all this into play here
in the United States?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's certainly a discussion that's going on around that. There's the recent law that was passed in California. And when you look back historically, there's various other regulatory spaces where you've really had this kind of hodgepodge of regulation form at the state level. And I think most businesses would agree that that's not the ideal environment for simplicity.
To have state-by-state solutions,
yeah.
That could be a problem with an internet that touches the world.
Exactly, yeah. So you tend to have a hodgepodge, right, landscape as far as regulatory compliance goes when you have it at the state level. So I think, to me, the smart money is really to look at a federal standard. You know, there is conversation going on. There was recent testimony last week, actually, in Congress about that, around a federal data privacy standard. You know, as far as the political winds for that and what may be, you know, it's very hard to say how quickly we would see a federal standard form.
The speed of government.
Yes, for sure.
So now, is there anything that businesses can do to protect themselves that are, it's kind of low hanging fruit, or is this something that you don't want to mess with this? You got to bring in an expert.
Well, certainly, I think, you know, whether we come in as an expert or somebody else, you know, the fundamental starting point is understanding what information you have. And that's one of the first questions we're going to ask, or really anybody else should ask as well. So I think from a business prep standpoint, businesses should really understand or identify what sensitive information they're gathering from the marketplace, understand where they handle that internally, and then also who they're giving it to downstream of them. So that's where third-party vendors come in. Really assembling that picture, that's something that businesses really have to answer those questions themselves. We can't necessarily answer that for them, but that's a great starting point for a company to understand what data specifically they have and where it's going.
So now, is this an industry issue? Like certain industries are more, should worry about this more? Like I would imagine healthcare, with all the data they have and the value of that data, financial services, that seems obvious. But are there other things that maybe aren't so obvious, other industries that should be paying attention?
Well, I think it depends on what you're talking about. So when we talk about data privacy, we really talk about that being a horizontal problem, meaning that whether no matter who you are, or what industry vertical you're in, you likely need to look at this issue and deal with it in some way. You do certainly get into various industry verticals or data sets that are more heavily regulated, are more valuable on the black market. Things like healthcare information, payment card industry, all of those financial data. So there certainly is information that's out there that I would say has some nuances around its data security or privacy requirements that might not be as general as just data privacy overall.
Now, in these industries that are regulated, do you think that they're good, or like, is that an area that it can always be better?
So I think it's always a cat and mouse game. When I look at, you know, one of
the bad guys are pretty focused on getting this right.
Correct. Yeah.
It's their job. It's not a hobby by a 14-year-old hacker in a basement with Cheetos.
Yeah. You know, maybe 10 years ago, that's what it was. In the modern day or modern age now, when you talk about what's going on, it is absolutely very sophisticated attacks that occur, oftentimes involving organized crime across multiple jurisdictions. So these are very complicated organizations, a lot of expertise. Yeah, so it's hard to keep up with these guys. They are very much professionals in their own right.
So now, is it something that, like, these bad guys, the value must be so high that it's worth organizing in this manner?
Mm-hmm.
And it must be so complicated it requires organizing in this manner. Like, how does how do you stay ahead of it? It seems like almost an impossible task.
So certainly looking at the risks of the information you have, so the type of information you had.
Like, what's the most valuable information right now?
There's varying statistics. I mean, really probably the most valuable record that's out there on the black market today would be that of a healthcare record. And just simply because of the nature of how long and that information persists and is actually valuable for potential uses.
But like, what's the value of my healthcare record for a bad guy?
There's multiple figures. On average, the number that I have would be right around $300 a record, and it
varies.
But
what do they get by knowing that?
So they can. There's a lot of different ways they can exploit that information. So there's things around fraud on for things like Medicare, Medicaid services. There is identity theft. There's a lot of different ways that when you talk about on the black market that they can monetize that information.
And they're always brainstorming, right? They're working together saying, hey, look what I took this and did this, so you should buy my stuff so you can do that too.
Correct. I mean, there are literally entire black markets and websites dedicated to selling data sets that have been stolen from companies.
And for you guys, when you're trying to find new clients, how do you go about doing that? Do you go to trade shows? Do you do create thought leadership? Like, what's the best way for somebody to learn more before they engage with you?
Sure. We do all of that. So we do workshops and thought leaderships in various areas. We've run several recently around GDPR and data privacy, really across the country. We also attend trade shows, various vertical trade shows, like HIMSS, for example, in the healthcare industry.
Right.
And then really, if people want to get to know us, they can check us out at our website, which is compliancepoint.com.
And on the website is like white papers and a lot of information, thought leadership around this.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, Greg Sparrow, thank you so much for sharing your story today. Again, the website is compliancepoint.com. Learned a lot. Thank you. It's super needed. And it's one of those things where it's only going to get more challenging for businesses to stay on top of this stuff, right?
Yep. Thank you, Lee.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, got Sal Principato. Did I say that right? In the ballpark?
Yes. Yes.
With TrivNow. TrivNow?
Yep.
I said that right too?
You did.
Look at that. Two for two. And Sal, why don't you tell us a little bit about TrivNow? How are you serving folks?
So we put on trivia events at bars and restaurants. It's a little different than what typical trivia night looks like. There is right now there's no host. So players walk in, we geofence a venue, and then players open up the app and they can play with friends for cash prizes and house prizes as well.
So it's like that. What was that app that something happened where everybody nationally went at 3 o'clock?
There's a lot of them like that. Casho, HQ.
Right. Yeah. So then everybody would go at 3 o'clock and some guy would go on and say, hey, if you get these 10 right, you win $100 or something around the world.
You share. But yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So now you've been able to figure out a way to do this in bars locally.
Yeah. What I kind of noticed even playing those games, is that playing with friends is a lot more fun than playing alone at home.
Right.
So, bring people out to,
they thought a charming host was going to solve that problem.
Yeah. Well, we're still looking to stream a host into the bars.
Right.
But it's still a lot more fun when you're actually with friends, you know, out having a drink, having some good food on a weeknight.
So now tell me how it works. So I go to a bar and then they go, somebody yells, hey, it's time for trivia, or what happened?
No, just it's all on.
It's always there. It's always on.
It's not always on. It's we run one event every week, Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. And you just go to one of our venues and open up the app and you're able to start playing.
And then, so I can't play at my house.
No, you cannot.
So I have to be in the bar.
One of our bars. Yeah, exactly.
And then, so it's a chicken and the egg thing. So you have to get all the bars to agree to this?
We do. And that's actually been,
easy.
Yeah. Because what we've noticed was, bar trivia has been around, or pub trivia has been around for like 40 years. But if you go to a pub trivia show today and you went to one 40 years ago, there'd
be the same.
It'd be the exact same.
Right. Some guy yelling.
Yeah.
Right?
Screaming over a microphone, right. You know, tallying up answer slips from drunk people's, you know, chicken scratch handwriting. It's you know, a mess, and it disturbs the operations of the bar. Not to mention the bar has to put up $150 to $200 per event to have these events running.
And then they pay. How did it work? They paid the guy to.
Yeah, the bar would pay $150 to $200
to the guy that's talking on the mic.
No, see, that's even the worst part about
then
this.
Then they paid him too, or no?
So they pay a company, and the company collects $150 to $200, and then that company pays the host around $50. Mm-hmm. So the host is having to maintain relationships with the bar owner, engage with the patrons, tally up all the answer slips, and they get a third to a fourth of, you know, the revenue for the night. So that actually put a lot of put a big barrier up for bars to even use a trivia night, because of the cost of that. You know, you have to get a lot of people in to cover the $200.
Right. So how many people would you have to have extra in order to make that math
work? I mean, you're at least 35 people at the bar every night to be able to, you know, break even or make money at that rate, at that cost of $150, $200. But we charge $100 a month for a subscription.
Right.
And then we charge per player when they come in. So the bar doesn't get billed unless a player is actually
logs in.
Yeah. And plays at the bar.
And then, but the player doesn't pay.
Correct.
So the bar is just paying and you're just counting.
Correct. Yeah.
And then, if 30 people come in that night, then it's $30 plus the $100 a month. So that's a lot more affordable than.
Correct.
The
and
old
we,
model.
We cap it out. So, we cap it out at 400 max a month in, per player fees.
Okay, so then they know at the worst case scenario what it'll be.
Correct.
And probably the combination of the 400 plus the 100 is less than it would have been if they had hired somebody.
Yeah, I mean, if you're bringing in one of the major, you know, hosting companies, it's $800 to $1,000 a month.
Oh, so it's less than half of that. Yeah. So when you got in this because you went to one of these and said, this is ridiculous, they're doing
it. Yeah,
for 40 years.
Yeah, I was with a friend, and it just got annoying that every 5 minutes I'd have to run up a piece of paper.
It's just silly. You
know, I'm there to hang out with my friends. I'm not there to exercise.
Now, what about the, when you're doing it your way, what stops them from like Googling answers and things like that?
We give way more points based on how fast you answer.
Speed.
So speed is a big factor. In addition, we use images and GIFs. So, and not just like who is this person or where is this at?
It's harder to Google questions.
Yeah, much harder. Yeah.
So now, do you have somebody on staff that just does questions?
We have a team, yeah.
You have a team?
Yeah.
Of like, hey, this would be a good question?
Yeah, well, what's been great is the community's given us, I mean, a bunch of suggestions. You know, they obviously want to know, or they want to know what the answers are, so they're going to give us categories that they like. We cover 12 categories a night, and there's a wide array of categories.
So what are some of the categories?
I mean, everything from you know, the office trivia to sports to technology.
So you have to be a generalist. You can't be just great at, you know, Simpsons trivia to correct. Do well on yours.
We really want to make sure people bring a diverse group.
Right.
You know, because if you have one friend who knows about one topic, another friend that knows about another, you guys can kind of work together.
So am I playing as an individual or am I playing as a table?
You're playing, it's kind of a gray area, I guess you could say, because people definitely play in groups and they all have their phones out. But then there are also people who play, they have one phone out and, you know, everyone's kind of contributing to that one.
So you don't care?
No, it doesn't matter because the speed is, at the end of the day, the biggest factor.
And you're only competing with people in that room?
You're competing against people all across any venue in our network. So right now we're on the East Coast. So if you're playing here at, you know, Sandy Springs Meehan's or in Atlantic Station or something like that, you'll be playing against people in Florida, New York, you know, Kentucky.
Okay, so now it's harder for me to win now.
It is, but you still get the bar prizes. So the bar prizes, which is currently given out for, you know, in traditional trivia nights, that's all they put up is the bar prizes.
Right.
So you can still go to a bar and play and win those bar prizes where you can redeem them at that bar that you won at. But then there's a global leaderboard where we put up cash, $5,000, $10,000 a month for players to win, and we pay them out via PayPal.
Now, the bar prizes, you're keeping track of that on the app because it's geofenced?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are two leaderboards. There's a venue leaderboard and then a global leaderboard.
So I can still get the $50 bar
correct,
credit.
Exactly.
And so I can win, like even though it's unlikely I'll win the national prize, but I can still win the $50 from the bar.
Correct. Yeah.
So then the bar still pays that. So they're okay with paying that?
Yeah, of course, because it brings people back into their venue.
Right. So then it's kind of the best of both worlds for the bar. They still get that. It's more efficient and more fun way of doing it. Less people, less hassle. And then the benefit for the player is then there's even more bonus. If I'm super ninja at this, I can win thousands of dollars.
Exactly. Yeah. And the cool part for the, you know, one of the common things bars have faced over the past 4 years is when they have a slow, like, following for trivia or a low following for trivia, the first thing the bar or the host will ask is put up some more money. So by going,
so they think the solution is the prize wasn't good enough.
Correct. Yeah.
But that's not true, right?
Well, that the prize is definitely part of it. You want to make sure that there's an incentive for people to play. But at the end of the day, I mean, people are more likely to play trivia on their phone nowadays than with a piece of paper.
Now, so you're playing with the idea of having kind of a charismatic host.
Where we are looking to stream in, we actually just released our TV app. So bars can show now the events on their
on
TV.
On this TV.
And we're looking to have a host streamed in as well.
So you're auditioning hosts?
Not yet, but I'll keep you in mind.
Not me, but no? I know some guys. But that is something that it's going to, you're going to test that at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely want to do it. I mean, we think streaming in a host is something that'll be really engaging, and it kind of brings, you know, connects. It's a larger community playing here. It's not just, you're not isolated to just people at your venue. You're playing alongside with, you know, people all up along the East Coast.
So now, how did it, take me through the beginning of this. So yeah, you have to have, you start out in one bar at first, or did you start out in multiple bars?
Well, so actually we started this, we started the project 3 years ago, and we wanted to build something a tool that would just make the host life easier.
Okay, so it was first to help that guy who was showing up with his little pads of paper and the little pencils.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember going up to that host that the night that it kind of came to me, and I was like, why are you guys not doing this? And the first thing that he said was, how are you going to stop cheating? And I was like, well, that's not that hard. I mean, you can figure out ways around that. So
you can call Greg Sparrow and his compliance folks can solve that problem in 2 seconds.
But yeah, so... at that, we put together a prototype. We started reaching out to some of the largest hosting companies in the United States. And
are there is there kind of a conglomerate of these hosting companies that are out there that are like a little host mafia of trivia out there?
There's like 10,000 locations or venues in the United States that do trivia night.
How many? There's unlimited. I mean, there must be even more
host
bars.
Yeah, there are. There's 60,000.
60,000 bars and 10,000 of them do trivia?
Correct.
Really? Yeah. One out of six?
Yeah.
Wow. So now they don't need those guys anymore.
They don't need that model is just
right.
You know, obsolete. There's no reason for them to go
so
that
you're
route.
You're going head to head with these guys.
Yeah, well, we wanted to.
You wanted to work with them.
We did. But we really
you tried.
Did, yeah.
But that just didn't work out.
No, they. Some of them, you know, wanted exclusivity. Some of them thought that paper and pencil was
better.
Was internet
we'll see.
A fad.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see who wins this, right?
Yeah.
So now you're going out there. Has anybody figured out that this is a good place to be? Now, do you have competitors doing this now?
Not yet.
Okay,
no.
So we're going to hopefully we get a land grab before that occurs, right?
Yeah.
So now you're going out there. So you started out trying to solve this problem for them. They didn't want to solve the problem because they figured out they're smarter than you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the bar directly.
Yeah.
And then so you had one bar at first?
No, we've been launched for 4 months with this product, and we've deployed to about 10 states, like 100 locations.
So you were just going to these bars, hey, I got this thing.
Yeah, but we are now using... we're actually now, because we've had so many requests from community members, we're now kind of leveraging a new approach where we're
like
actually
an
reaching
ambassador.
Out. So yeah, exactly. Where we're reaching
so
out.
So now the people are like, you go and find a bar and we'll give you some...
A gift card.
Gift card. There you go. So then you're using a network effect.
Exactly, yeah.
And then, so now you're going out there and so that's helped you grow faster, I would imagine.
It's definitely helping. And we're still trying to perfect how we reach out to the venues, because a lot of this is building trust, you know, over time. And when you're remote...
It's harder.
Yeah.
So now what's the set right now? You just got to have a conversation with them and explain it.
Yeah. A lot of people though, still, I mean, they get concerned when we say we're setting up a geofence. They're like, I don't want an orange fence around, the venue. And,
so a lot of explaining.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cause they're not probably the most tech savvy folks.
No, of course,
some of these bar people.
I mean, they're definitely not. They usually have someone manage it, but they have a lot going on. I mean, they have a lot going on at their venues.
So now all the people are there and they're local in the room and they're playing on their phone and they're playing this game. Are you able to kind of say to the venue, hey, you know what? I'll let you sell ad space here and then I'll kick you back.
So actually we allow venue owners to put as many advertisements as they want.
And they keep all the money?
Yep, they can do whatever they want with them.
So that's their real estate, do whatever they want.
Correct. Yeah.
Are they taking advantage or that's still
some
a little
still
tricky
are,
for
but
them?
Some are like they're reaching out to like we have a bar in Pennsylvania that they've actually reached out to their distributors and they've gotten
their liquor
right. And they've gotten ads shown there. And with our TV app,
it'll be more opportunity to kind of build a square around the image or something, and
they can show their advertisements right on the TV and
While they're waiting. Is it still, does it work in the same way, or is it now because it's digital you can do these faster? Because that always drove me crazy in those tributes.
Well, they can do them as fast as they want or as many as they want.
Now the game, you're controlling the game, right?
Well, the game runs. No, this game runs. It runs automatically, and there are you answer 6 questions. Each question is 30 seconds, and then you have a four minute break.
Mm-hmm.
So there's time to order another drink, chat with friends.
So you build in the break, and that's where ads can run and other distractions.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
And so when you got into this, had you made apps before? Is that what your background is, making apps?
No, I studied management and biology at Georgia. And then I started a master's at State. And midway through there, I had an idea to fix our education system.
Really? How's that going?
Didn't go well.
Bar trivia is much better place to be.
Yeah, it's just the barriers of entry there and the red tape was just a little bit
of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So now you're out there as an entrepreneur. Was this your first entrepreneurial venture or you had...
I guess kind of the second one, but the first one was really the education product. I wanted to create a system where I noticed that in K-12, a lot of the costs for technology just kept skyrocketing. And if we could create a model where college students are building tools for K-12, it creates a cool symbiotic relationship between, both levels of our education system.
Right.
And with Georgia Tech right in our backyard, I figured, why not?
That's
a
no-brainer, right?
Yeah. So we met with Fulton County and stuff, but it's just, there was too much red tape.
You thought getting bar trivia people to change was hard.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a bridge too far, I think.
Yeah.
So now for you, you're just taking over the world. That's the next step.
No, probably not.
The bar world. You got
yeah. The bar
you're
world.
You're only
yeah.
in 12 states. There's still a whole country to go.
Yeah, there's still a lot. We do want to move over to the central time zone and mountain and west coast. But
so now, from a technology standpoint, it doesn't matter, right? You don't have any problem scaling this. This seems pretty straightforward, except it'll be a little trickier with the different time zones.
Yeah, we want to have a different game for every time zone.
Right. And that's all manageable.
Yep. Yeah.
So now, has anything surprised you? Has this been easier than you anticipated? Because it seemed pretty easy.
The biggest surprise, I think, would have been the, they teach you in business school, like, to, you never want to compete. You always want to come up with something that is right. just 10x better than your competitors and that, you know, everyone else has to catch up. But what they don't tell you is that the hardest part is the education right. after that, teaching the market of, you know, that you've been doing this wrong for 40 years.
It's hard to change the status quo.
Yeah. So that's really the most surprising or most unforeseen problem.
But I'll tell you that it was a blessing that the people didn't want to change, right? Because if your business was just helping those trivia people with the thing.
Yeah, that's a good way
to
look at it.
That would have been a different business for you.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
This has a much bigger upside, I would think.
Mm-hmm. We have noticed that a lot of the venues that we brought on, they've never done trivia before.
Because right, that's even better.
Yeah, because they didn't want to get involved.
It's too much of a hassle.
Exactly, yeah.
So you've taken the hassle out, and it's just a way for them. It's a small investment to make good money and to serve their clients better.
Exactly, yeah. And the cool part, too, we actually just we streamlined the whole sign-up process now, so you can actually go onto the website and set your venue up completely remotely. You don't even need to contact, you know.
Anyone. I know that's your dream, but I'm sure they still call.
They do.
Have some questions. Well, good stuff, Sal. This is exciting time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
And it looks like the sky's the limit. I'm excited for you. Please keep us posted and tell us how things are going.
Yep.
Because it's a great story. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
You can go to our website. You can go to churnow.com/info to find out more information about this for business owners. You can kind of see.
And Triv, TRIBNOW is the website.
Yep.
You couldn't get Trivia Now? That was already taken.
We don't have to do Triv Now, just something unique.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Sal.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.